This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 758, brought to you by the Marvel Made Paragon Collection, Chris Claremont Premier Bundle, available for pre-order now at getmarvelmade.com/iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you, wearing your masks, washing your hands, doing what you can to help other people in this time that it's needed more than anything. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 758. No, we didn't make it political. We just really give a shit about people.
Yep.
That's all there is to that. I am Josh Flanagan, and this is Connor Kilpatrick.
Well, not all the people. Some of them.
I don't want them to die. We are iFanboy, and every week we read a stack of comics. One of us picks the one that they like the best. We call that the pick of the week. We will talk about that comic book. We will talk about other comic books from the week. We will talk about the patron pick. We will get to listener mail and questions if there is time. We will give out patron powers. We will decide we're over, but what the heck, let's keep going for a little bit more. We will do all of those things because it is a good time, it is fun, and we hope that our fun is contagious to you. And you know what, contagious is the wrong word to use. That's, I'm not, yeah, I don't, geez. I apologize.
We hope to cough our fun all over you and sneeze it into you.
I would like to infect you with my joy. Just your spoiler warning, there will be spoilers because that is what happens when you talk about stories with any kind of usefulness at all. So if you don't want to be spoiled, come back later or be gone with you.
Be gone.
This week, this is Star Wars Episode 1. I did a Boss Nass right there. I don't know if you caught that. Connor, you have the pick.
I do. It was a strange week.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a lot of books. There was some things, and there were things I really enjoyed. At the end of the day, I finished my books, and I wasn't sure what to do. I had a couple that I really liked, and we're going to talk about them. But I kept thinking about Captain America 25, and here are the reasons why. That's the pick of the week. There's two stories in here. One's by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Leonard Kirk, Matt Miller, Joe Caramagna, and then there's one by Anthony Falcone and Michael Cho, Joe Caramagna. And the first story, it's sort of, I think, where we've been culminating, which makes sense. It's issue 25 of in this Ta-Nehisi Coates run of the return. Sharon Carter has now come back. She's come back from being old, from the Gen Z
Gen Z, Dimension Z. Dimension Z?
Ooh, Dimension Z.
Dimension Z story for Rick Remender so many years ago. So many years ago. So she's finally been restored, but she's not herself anymore.
Also what I would call the last great John Romita Jr. arc.
That was great. She's not Peggy of old.
She's not, you know, Peggy at all.
I'm not Peggy. She's not Sharon of old. She's different.
Yes.
And so here we get her sort of taking stock of where she is now and the history of her life as it has been related to her Aunt Peggy. And I can't believe I didn't see it coming, because it was so all of a sudden so much about Peggy, and Peggy was captured by, I guess, Red Skull, and they're trying to free her. And at one point, I thought she was Black Widow because the costume they have her.
I had that same problem.
And then she gets killed, trying to escape the captors, mm-hmm. and the Lucans, the Alexandra Lucans, and. It was fun. I liked it. It was solid. I enjoyed it. And then I got to the Michael Cho, Anthony Falcone story, and I just loved it. It was my favorite 10 pages of the week.
Yeah, I flipped over to that page from... It really does look like Black Widow dying.
Yeah.
I was like, where'd she come from? I flipped that page, and I went, oh, Michael Cho, who's in a lot of ways kind of a spiritual successor to the art style of Darwin Cook, if I'm completely honest.
He's from Toronto. He's in the same circle of friends.
It was a lovely story, and I read this one, and what I thought was, when I was like, that story could be the pick of the week, and then I saw
that's what I thought, and I thought about it. I was like, well, how long was it? So I went back, and I was like, if it's like 5 pages, it's probably not long enough to really make this the pick of the week. But it was 10. It's like half of a regular comic, and if any comic has 10 really incredible pages, then that could be very easily the pick of the week. And mm-hmm. I thought this story was just a lot wonderful. It, the art was beautiful, but also I thought the story was great.
Yeah,
it was about Captain America at a funeral, and giving a eulogy in Brooklyn to this guy who's just a regular dude, and it turned out to be just this immigrant who Cap met after a mission in a diner, and they became friends. And it was sort of one of those, like, he's been friends this whole time, because we get a little, like, you know, trip through Marvel history with Cap's with the, you know, the early Avengers team, the second lineup team of, I guess technically the third lineup team of Hawkeye, Quicksilver, and Scarlet Witch. And then we see him with the Howling Commandos. We see him fighting Nuke, and we see him as the captain. And so we get to see how throughout his history, this friendship blossomed. And I thought it was a really sweet and lovely story. It had a nice message in today's world, and I just thought, man, I wish Michael Cho was drawing this whole book, like, because he's really good.
Yeah, I don't know that he would be the right guy for the story that's going on.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, I mean, but even so, like, I'm very familiar with Michael Cho's pinups. You know, like, yeah. I frequently see them back when he used to do the SketchUp. Back when he used to do the SketchUp, I always appreciated him, and I see them on his Instagram feed now. And they're quite joyful. I can't even remember the last sequential pages I've seen from him.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know if I've ever seen sequential pages from him. Yeah, but it was a really sort of sweet story about, you know, Steve Rogers in a sort of a down moment, you know, and meeting this, you know, hardworking Korean immigrant. A little bit of a stereotype there, but not necessarily a bad one, you know. And you see the other side of things is that. You see this guy go through his life and get older, and Steve doesn't.
Right.
Which is also really interesting. Which also suggests, by the way, that Steve's been around and alive a lot longer than... again, this is not
it's canon
or anything.
It's comic book time. You know?
It's like comic book time, but I like that as a take. Like, he's been back for a long time now and been through a lot of this stuff. By the way, though, if that's true, then Clint Barton should be like 60, and I think that's hilarious.
Well, just it's the last ability, but he does get to do, he does, yeah. I mean, the immigrant guy is a young father, and then he's gray haired, I guess, grandfather by the time he dies. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, it did allude to the Hydra Cap thing, which we need to forget. I think that's clear. We just need to put it in the past, like the Peter Parker baby. And ignore it. But either way, no, totally, totally great story. And, you know, like, it was clear, I want to say three pages in, when he shows up at the diner, I was like, oh, this is a special short story. You know, I could just, it was delightful.
And I don't know the name Anthony Falcone, but
I believe that he's the underboss of Gotham City.
But it's a nicely done story. Yep. It's 10 pages. It manages to be sort of sweeping and epic in its time scale. It tells a really tight message, and the characterization. I mean, I felt like, you know, I knew a lot about this guy by the time it was over. It was nice.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And you know what? I also, just because I didn't want to gloss over it, Leonard Kirk actually on the main story of the book was a welcome surprise too. Notwithstanding that that Peggy Black Widow issue that we talked about, you know, just top quality artist who I don't see enough, and I really like. I like how he works.
There's somewhat something similar about the two stories, because this is also kind of an overview.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is 25 doesn't really make, it's not important other than in comic book world. It's kind of important.
He got shot in the Brubaker one.
Right. So
and Will Anderson
kind of
screwed it up at 8 a.m. Sorry. Never forget.
Do you want to tell the back people what you're talking about, who don't know what you're talking
Connor
about?
Connor and I used to work in the same office when Captain America 25, The Death of Captain America, came out. Walk into the office. I mean, 8 a.m. Who am I kidding? It was 9:15. you know, and he's like, I can't believe Captain America died. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? It's Wednesday morning. You know we go get comics at noon. That was a good time, by the way, to go get comics. Like every Wednesday, you and I would go get comics at noon. That's good stuff. Yeah, he spoiled it for me, and I will never forget. I saw in the back store, in the second story, there's the shot of Captain America on the ground shot, and I thought, damn it, Will. I literally, that was my first instinct. It will always be tainted by that. And so when people say, Josh, why are you so sensitive about spoilers? which is one of the reasons I'm not on social media, because I was pissing me off.
Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
But they were similar, because this is the first story was sort of Sharon's overview, not to the extent of Captain America's in the second story, but she's sort of looking back on her life and then Peggy's life. You know, we see her as a young woman with Steve in their fatigues, and then we see her sort of running the teams in the war. We see, you know, and then after Cap's gone, we see her sort of, you know, her post-Cap life, and then, you know, so it's a similar sort of montage-y scenario as the second one.
I also really like the, let's call it the awakening of Sharon Carter. She's always been this sort of background character who, you know, has a relationship with Steve, and she's like the super capable agent, which is a Marvel trope, is to take a beautiful woman and make her like the most capable person in the world in her super spy world. You know, like there's a lot of those. And by doing this thing where they aged her, and I got to say, really stuck with it. I mean, how long ago was that Remender run? I feel like that was forever ago.
Yeah.
And they really dug into it and kept her around. And, you know, I think Coates makes an interesting choice in, this isn't so much about the characterization and growth of Steve Rogers as a character. I think he decided, like, well, that guy is who he is. He's a constant. He's dealing with this stuff or whatever. But let's really turn this other character into somebody and really bring them to a turning point and a crossroads and watch them grow from there. And I think that, I mean, in a perfect world, this would lead to, you know, more stories with just that character, or like a really interesting person you could build a series around. I don't think that happens anymore. But,
well, in some ways, she's the main character.
Yes, yeah, and they can only do that by fooling you, basically. But
right, I mean, Cap is sort of,
he's Steve Trevor.
Yeah, he's not in the background,
right.
But he's not the primary force of the story.
Yeah,
right now it's been Sharon and her story,
which I think is really interesting. I don't have a problem with that in a Captain America book. I think that works.
Altogether, though, this is a really nice package. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I don't think I've ever seen Michael Cho do sequentials. Maybe I have. I just don't realize it. It's probably another old issue I've read that I don't remember. But
mm-hmm. I think he did a New Frontier short story
backup?
Spin-off backup thing.
One of those, that issue where they had like two backups?
Something like that. I think.
Yeah.
Someone will.
Remember I talked about that on the show when we read the New Frontier.
Yeah.
One of them was J-Bone and one of them was him. I think that was what it was.
Yep.
Anyway, this was beautiful. It's a nice little summation. Also, I think it's a good jumping on point for people if you're sort of, you know, haven't been reading Captain America in a while. Yeah. It's a good place to start.
I think so. It gives
what you need. Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, no one wants to see the Nazis come back, but if they have to, he's...
But anytime there's a panel of them in the war, I mean, that's all I want the Captain America book to be. I just want World War II adventures. You know, no other superheroes, just that.
Well, there was the invaders and the... And,
you don't need them, though. It's fine. Wizard. They can be there. I'll take that, too.
I really liked Rorschach 2, Rorschach number 2. Also, Rorschach 2. Tom King, Jorge Fornes, Dave Stewart, Clayton Cowles. This was also up there for pick of the week. It was almost mundane, and that was what I liked about it, in that it was basically this entire
Tom
issue was just,
almost mundane King.
Well, that was the beauty of it, I think, was that it was a police investigation, and it's not like a, you know, in a movie or a TV show where they're like, you know, it's very action oriented. It's just this guy going from clue to clue to clue. You know, he does one interview that leads into another clue. That clue takes him to another interview. He finds a piece of evidence. He moves to the next thing. It's very methodical. And I really liked that. And I also liked the artifact nature in the middle where we read one of the guy's comics. I always enjoy those things where you can see the paste-ups.
Call him Steve Ditko?
Steve Ditko, yeah.
Can we just do that?
And then, so that's part of it too, is we get this sort of Ouroboros meta commentary of Rorschach becoming Steve Ditko. Steve Ditko, who created the Question, who was turned into Rorschach by Alan Moore. So you get this sort of, you know, infinite loop here. And I liked that aspect of it. I mean, up to the Jorge Fornes art, it's terrific. I thought this was a really strong, solid issue.
Just, I guess, I don't want to assume everybody knows the thing. So Steve Ditko, co-creator of Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, later kind of just left comics, at least in a public way. And he was creating his own comics for years. Primarily, he created The Question, but then he went in and he got very into objectivism and Ayn Randism stuff, good and evil, no line in between. He did this book called Mr. A or whatever. And he never wanted to talk about his work. He just kind of disappeared, except he was working, you know, in an office. And if you went there, you could knock on the door and talk to him. You know, but that was kind of all. And this character is very closely aligned to that, I think. I think that's really interesting in a way. Overall, I'm not sure what the book is, and I'm not sure if I like it. But I've been here before with a Tom King series early on. So I'm not, again, craft, unquestionable. You know, do I want to read a Rorschach book? Like Josh, would you like to read a book about Rorschach? No. But... You know, given the pedigree, given the skill of both the artist and the writer and the colors, you know there's going to be something interesting there. I'm not salivating about it yet. I think there's some interesting ideas, but, you know, I'm spending a lot of time wondering, like, what are we working at here? So I'm not
fully in. Yeah, because I think your point is well taken, that who knows what this is or why this is. So it's not, it takes place many, many years after Watchmen. It takes place after the TV show. Even though obviously it takes place in the world of Watchmen, who knows if it's in those continuities? It does, in the first issue, there was a reference to Tulsa, but who knows?
They say New York, so.
Right. It takes place in the Watchmen world because it's Rorschach and the Watchmen, but. It doesn't really matter. You don't have to worry about it being in continuity or anything like that. It's just a story, you know, nothing matters, nothing makes sense, and everything matters, everything makes sense. So just take it however you want to take it. So is it a Watchmen story? It's in the world. Is it a Rorschach story? Well, he's dead. And so I guess the mystery is what happened, because he was killed at the end of Watchmen, but he was also apparently back and died at the beginning of this series. So what does that mean? And I think that this cop uncovering that story, it seems to be the story, but who knows? It's only issue 2 of 12.
It's so long way to go. It's so odd that this is the book that he breaks out of the 9-panel grid. I think that's brilliant.
I mean, it's still the overall format is still there. Doesn't adhere to it as much as possible.
But I'm looking at, let's see, page 7. in the digital reader, where the investigator is looking. I love this page. It's inside the guy's art studio, and you know, it's split into four panels, and the top panel and the bottom panel are current. So the lights are off. Yeah. You know, the investigator comes in. You know, it's guided by a sound effect on the first one of the lock coming undone. And then you skip to the past and you see the artist sitting at his desk and he looks over in that direction and says, "What? I'm coming." He gets up to answer the door. And then we switch back to the present where he's gone again. And I love that. Feels like a real room. And I know a comic book artist should be able to draw what a comic book, but
right.
The books stacked up everywhere. And there's two desks and a bunch of cabinets. And I just...
There's literally pens everywhere.
I know this room. And then the next page is sort of, you get into the drawers and the...
Yeah,
the,
felt very authentic.
Oh my goodness. That's just beautiful.
I mean, he opens a drawer and there's like a million different kind of pens. It's just, that's absolutely what comic artists I've seen.
I've been in that space. I understand that world. And in fact, as you go in later, you see him open the drawer and you see the original pages that you turn over and you get to those sort of artist edition type pages. With the white pasted in words over top of the sort of yellowed artboard, and like there's a lot of interesting things happening here, but I'm not like sucked into a story. I think anyway, but there's so much. There's a lot to like, and you know, it's just gonna have to coalesce.
Yeah, I mean, there's no indication yet what this is.
Mm-hmm. How many issues? Six, eight,
12.
Whoa, of course. Oh, sorry, it's 12. Dumb question.
It. You know, and it opened up in the first issue with an attempted assassination on the president, the guy running for president. The two people who did it, one was dressed as Rorschach, and there's a woman dressed in her own costume. And then in the last issue, I believe we found out that the DNA or something matched Rorschach, even though Rorschach is dead. So that's the central mystery here, is who is this guy and why is he seemed to be Rorschach, even though Rorschach was disintegrated by Dr. Manhattan. So that is, to me, the central mystery. But right now, I'm just along for the ride with this cop who, you know, it looks like he's got this. It's not the 70s, but he's got sort of that feel of a rumpled 70s New York cop, which I like.
Always.
It was good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Did you check out Marvel Voices, Indigenous Voices?
I didn't. Should I have?
It was good. It was a bunch of stories all written and drawn by American Indian creators and using American Indian characters. And it was fun. It was... It was a very authentic feeling. I think that's probably the point. And some of the stories. So there's really three stories, but there's a Watcher thing in the beginning where it's just a 2-page spread in which the Watcher talks about, you know, all these different characters throughout the years at Marvel. It's actually 2 pages. It's 3 pages if you count the first page. But beautifully designed in that style of all these characters, making them look like old totems and. Just going through all the history of all these characters and how they're related to each other. That was nice. And then there's an Echo story.
Oh, wow.
Which she gets taken on a cosmic adventure. That's probably my least favorite of the stories, but it was still fun. Then there was one in the middle where we go with Mirage, who is at a county fair in Arizona and gets into a X-Men mystery with Danny Moonstone. And anyone's name is Mirage, but I never call her Mirage. I don't know why, what her name is. But anyway, they find a mutant out in the desert, and he gets involved in a dispute with the local sheriff, and so they have to intervene. And then the last story, the Silver Fox story, was took place in the past, and it was fucking brutal. I was like, wow. It's where. Silver Fox and her husband Trigo go to a fort in the Northwest Territories in Canada and just decimate it. They destroy all their provisions, and she, one of them, I guess, is Silver Fox, has the ability to see the future. So she's with every provision they destroy, she sees what it'll do to them as they just turn on each other because there's no food and start killing each other and eating each other. And I was like, Jesus. And so it was just this rough, like, we're gonna destroy this, the invader's fort. And
like an Inglorious Bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of flipping through it. I think this one has the best art of the lot.
Yes. It was the best story.
Yeah.
But that one was by Stephen Graham Jones, art by David Cutler.
Stephen Graham Jones, very different from Stephen Graham, who played Al Capone.
The Danny Musson was by Darcy Little Badger, with art by Kyle's Charles, and then the Echo Store was by Rebecca Roanhorse, with art by Wes Oit, Al Vitre. I'm probably totally butchering that, but it was a really nice anthology. There weren't too many stories. It was just three solid stories, by creators you don't normally see. And it was fun to see new voices, as literally said in the title. And I think in the end it said one of these, there's going to be a book coming out of this, not by these creators, but by two other American Indian creators, Taboo and B. Earl, about an Apache warrior sorcerer supreme in the 1880s or the 1800s. So that's fun. I look forward to that.
I'll tell you what the problem with this book is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible cover. And it's probably
it's a bad cover.
It's an awful cover. Like, the art on the cover is not good. It's not a good design. It looks like we didn't really bother with this. So I think that's why I didn't really bother with it.
And the title's not great.
Yeah. I think it's very clear what it is, but it's not particularly artful.
The title has four words, two of which are the same.
Yeah.
There just could have been a better way to do it. And you're right. I mean, the cover, the drawing itself isn't bad, the characters. It's the sort of just throw a filter behind them aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, like they just, we have this group shot, just throw in this Photoshop filter of purple light. It just doesn't give you anything.
Yep. But although when you turn on, you see that first image of the Watcher, like I was like, put that on the cover.
Yeah.
That's a piece of art right there.
I don't know why that guy didn't do the cover.
Yeah.
You know, the double page spread's just incredible. Just, you know, have him do a stylized version of the characters in the book.
Yep. Absolutely.
So that was, I totally agree with you. When I downloaded it, I was like, oh, that's weird. That's not good. But I enjoyed the issue, though. I thought it was solid.
I always get the title wrong. Avengers Marvel's Snapshot may or may not be number one. I go back on.
No, it's not. It's the nature of all one-shots are number ones.
I think like all the apps have to categorize them as such, but I don't think the cover actually. No, it has a one on there. I don't know.
No, every comic is a number one. It tricks you into buying it.
I see.
Well, it's always been that way.
They fooled me. I have enjoyed all of the snapshots that I have.
There's more coming. I thought this was it.
That I have thus read. I think Kurt Busiek being the curator of them, whatever that might mean. He didn't edit them, but you know, I think maybe he's given the final.
What's the page rate on a curator?
Probably not a lot. Do you want to do this? We're not paying you. All right, sure. And it's another one of those, you know, it's a Marvel story, and that's kind of, which is sort of feels like an Astro City story, where, you know, it's
people it did feel very much like an Astro City
living
story.
In the shadow of, you know, a city or a place that is, you know, rife with superheroes and their battles and stuff. Written by industry veteran and stalwart Barbara Randall Kiesel. I don't remember seeing a middle name on there, but whichever.
No. She wrote a lot, you know, a while ago. So this story takes place, what, in the 80s?
Yeah, and it feels like a comic from the 80s, and not in a bad way. But basically, you know, it's a story of a woman who has moved to the city, and she is couch surfing, and her friends are annoyed with her, but she's a nurse and just can't get things together. And she meets a cop who is a Native American who's getting in trouble on the force, and then a battle breaks out, and they have to help people and get in an underground bunker. And it's kind of sweet, and it's kind of hokey. And you know, it's very much the ground view of what happens with these epic battles. And there's a really nice scene in here. It's actually very funny that they're in a cop bar and the cops are talking shit about superheroes. Tony Stark is at the bar drinking, and he turns around and says, "Hey, you show some respect." And he takes on the cops. Like he starts fighting with them, and he leaves in a huff. And you know, the cop goes outside, and he's singing a song about you know, the girl. Iron Man clacks down to the ground, you know, and he's like, "Uh oh." And this, Tony Stark said to give you a message. And then he gives him like a card that he uses later to call him in for a help. You know, like it's like one of those, the little guy tells the big guy what's up. You know, all a little bit paint by numbers, but charming. And you know, just like all these other stories, they've been a good time. This one had a little more of a retro-ish feel to it. That sort of, you know, goes back to when you and I started reading comics, I think.
Yeah. I went back and forth on the art. Sometimes I liked it, sometimes I didn't.
Yeah.
It was a little, I don't say unfinished, but just sometimes it just felt like the characters felt a little blobby, their faces, but sometimes it really worked.
Yeah, I think but overall, I like the bits where, I mean, like there's some really good things about it. That page with Captain mm-hmm. America coming down, the really
yeah.
shabby, beaten cocaine businessman that Tony Stark has drawn as is the best thing. Oh, also, there's an amazing scene with Wonder Man and the Beast. Yeah. Like, he completely failed, which I don't. That seems very out of character for Wonder Man, because basically he hits on this girl and he's terrible at it. And the Beast is like, no, here's what you have to do. But I was like, wasn't Wonder Man like a movie star?
Yeah.
Cool guy? Whatever. It was funny.
It was funny. I liked the concepts in it. I liked the idea that there's all these emergency bunkers in Manhattan for you to run to when there's a big superhero fight, kind of like London in the Blitz. Mm-hmm. I liked that it became very normal in an Astro City way. Like the final scene is they're having dinner together, and it's just in the background, the Vision is like in this giant fight with something, and they're not even paying attention.
Yeah.
While everybody else is like running around them, they're just having their wine. Like that felt very Astro City to me.
You know what another great thing is? Just Iron Man. See Iron Man's teeth behind his mask, his teeth and his eyes.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's weird. But I love that. Like, it's so much more realistic than whatever the weird, you know, sort of liquid armor that spreads over their body now.
Right. Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah. You can't see his teeth.
Yeah. It's weird.
You see so much of his face, you think that no one would have been surprised when Rhodey was under there. But
I mean, you'd smell the liquor.
But it was fun. It was fun.
It was.
Let's take a second to talk about the Marvel Made Paragon Collection. It's Marvel's newest prestige product exclusive to the Marvel Made platform, celebrating Marvel's most iconic writers and artists and featuring the most revered Marvel comic storylines and noteworthy moments over the years. The first Marvel Made Paragon Collection will start with a premiere bundle from none other than Marvel legend Chris Claremont. Now through just December 4th, the Marvel Made Paragon Collection, Chris Claremont premiere bundle, will be available for pre-order and only produced if 1,200 pre-orders or more are received. So it's almost like a Kickstarter situation. They'll only do it if they get 1,200 pre-orders, which you can do now until December 4th. The Marvel Made Paragon Collection Chris Claremont Premier Bundle includes a gorgeous faux leather hardcover book that is hand-numbered and signed by Chris, and includes one of four handwritten iconic quotes from his X-Men stories. The collection features a behind-the-scenes foreword by comic book icon Louise Simonson and collects classic mutant epics including The Dark Phoenix Saga, Days of Future Past, Wolverine, the limited series illustrated by Frank Miller, Uncanny X-Men 268, the iconic story featuring Captain America and Black Widow, X-Men number 1, the world's best-selling comic book of all time, illustrated by Jim Lee. Included in the bundle are all-new lithographs and comics from renowned artists, the Wolverine limited series homage litho by Joe Quesada, The Dark Phoenix Saga homage litho by Phil Noto, Inferno homage litho by Philip Tan, X-Men Claremont collage litho by Salvador LaRocca, a Storm Callisto battle homage by Marcos Martin, and an Asgardian Wars homage litho by Arthur Adams.
Oh my goodness.
A great lineup of artists for that. Plus an exclusive Wolverine 6 Days of Future Past themes variant comic book with a cover by Olivier Coipel, and an X-Men 13 Dark Phoenix action figure variant comic book cover by John Tyler Christopher. Also included is the world debut of an exclusive 20-page prequel comic for Days of Future Past, written by Chris Claremont and drawn by Salvador LaRocca. And that is not all. It's a lot. They keep adding on. In addition to the comics and the lithos, the bundle includes Claremont's original Days of Future Past notes and script, and brand new behind-the-scenes interviews with Chris Claremont about his most iconic and shocking X-Men stories. Don't miss out on the must-have collection for any Chris Claremont or X-Men fan. That's only available for a limited time for $199 plus tax and shipping. Along with the bundle, you'll receive a Marvel-made Paragon Collection Certificate of Authenticity. Bundles will begin shipping in March 2021. Go to getmarvelmade.com/ifanboy today to pre-order your copy of Marvel Made Paragon Collection Chris Claremont Premier Bundle. Don't wait on this one. Get your order in before December 4th at getmarvelmade.com/ifanboy.
This is not the copy. I work in making books. I work in book printing now. What they have just described at a run of 1,200 books, that price, especially because there's actually some original stuff in there and putting it all together, that price is really good. I mean, like to do 1,200 books that are that big and have a faux leather cover and all the sort of different kinds of inserts and lithos and things like that, that ain't cheap.
And also, if you're a Marvel fan from that era, if you're an X-Men fan from that era, if you're a Claremont fan, if you're one of those people who reads X-Men now and hates it and wishes it was more like the Claremont days, this seems like the bundle for you.
I mean, if the whole Dark Phoenix saga and Days of Future Past is in there,
that's pretty great.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's a good overview. Plus the whole Wolverine miniseries, which is terrific.
Oh wow, yeah. Oh, that's not bad.
That's three really great full storylines, and then you also get X-Men number one and Uncanny X-Men 268.
It's signed and numbered. I mean, like that's a lot.
Usually, you get like three trades in of content plus two extra issues plus all those lithos by those great artists plus the back matter.
Yeah, it's a really nice collection. So either they're not making a lot of profit on it, or they pummeled a printer into doing it at a really good rate, because that's a good deal.
You got a nice print shop here.
Yep.
It'd be a shame if something happened to it.
Actually, I probably know who did it. But either way.
So check that out at getmarvelmade.com/ifanboy to pre-order before December 4th if you're interested, if you're a big Marvel fan, if you're a big X-Men fan, if you're a big Chris Claremont fan.
Absolutely.
And now we hear from Josh, the newly converted horror fan.
Well, sometimes you got to get it where you can. But I read Sea of Sorrows number one from IDW, story by Rich Duick. I've met him. I don't know how to pronounce his name now that I've tried to say it out loud. Duick, good guy. Art by Alex Cormack. Letters by Justin Burke. I know it's kind of a horror book, but at the same time, it's also a submarine heist book. And basically, some down on their luck folks come up with a plan to salvage a submarine full of I think it's not Nazi gold. I think it's World War One German gold.
I saw the preview pages. I think it's German gold. Definitely German gold. I think it's from World War One.
And they're about to go, and they're meeting in a bar, and someone's like, "There's a problem," and it's what's the problem? And it's Oni Madden is involved, who is a famous Midwestern gangster from that period. And I thought, well, that's really interesting.
Well, it's definitely post-World War One then.
Yeah, yeah. However, it is a horror story. Mm-hmm. So there's an evil sea mermaid or whatever it is, down there.
Remember that submarine book that Image did a couple of years ago that was just terrific?
Yeah, that was all that animated style. And
Just do that. Me and Josh and five other guys will read it, and it'll get canceled for low sales, but I'll be happy.
But we'll bring it on here and talk about it. And
I'll be happy. Isn't that all that matters?
As many as 10 other people might buy it if we talk about
it. Right.
Anyway,
the demons out of it. I don't, just give me the heist.
I don't need the horror aspect of it. The rest of it, you totally had me, and I think that it's possible. And I don't know what that says about people who are making comic books, people who are printing comic books, or maybe they're buying them. I can't tell, but that's a good story on its own without the other thing, without putting it into horror. And I know that people are into that, but so it keeps me from loving a thing. But that, that is totally subjective, I think. So if those things that I said make you want to check out the comic book, then you should. It was well done.
There are way more horror fans than there are submarine heist German gold fans.
It takes place historic, period pieces.
Before we move to the next book, I do want to say that I was almost very upset at you because this week, when we get to the patron pick, there was a lot of horror books in contention after we had, I thought, did a good job of training the patrons that we don't like horror. Mm-hmm. And then last week, you go and you talk about a bunch of horror books. And so it looks like floodgates opened back up again.
I did see that in Discord.
And I was like, oh, but then it didn't end up happening. So it was fine. But
well,
I was almost going to chastise you on the air.
That's fine.
I'm trying stuff.
And if that's what there is to try, it's like, I don't like seafood, but if I'm in Italy on the coast and that's all there is, I'm going to have to try some of it.
Yeah, but you're talking about world-class seafood there.
This is what I'm saying. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying too.
Dark Knight's Death Metal number 5. Snyder, Capullo, Placencia, Napolitano. It's the same team that have been working together since Batman. I have been reading this series, and reading is very much of a generous term. I've been mostly skimming it for the art, because it's just, I don't know. I don't really follow. I don't really care about the metal stuff. But this was worth mentioning because, first of all, no one knows what's happening in DC right now. Obviously, there's a lot of people. People keep getting laid off. We don't know the future of the comics or the company. We don't know the future of their line. We don't know what the philosophy is. Dan DiDio's gone. We knew what his philosophy was. We don't know what the new people's philosophy is. We don't even really know who's in charge. But this issue, which may or may not be important to the rest of the DC universe, who knows, appears to bring back Hypertime, which was the best thing that – one of the best things Grant Morrison ever brought to comics, which was – the idea that all of the stories in comics have happened, and they all are in a continuity, and they all matter. There's no such thing as a story that doesn't matter. And here, who knows what's happening? They're all meddled out, and Wonder Woman is trying to restart the universe, and she says, "I was wrong to think we could use crisis energy to restart the multiverse." I don't really know what that means, but she was wrong. And then she says, "Whatever reality we made, no matter how bright, would be built out of a desire to control its shape. We can't restart everything our way, and we can't go back to the past. Instead, we will unknot the rope, and everything will matter, good, bad, and uncertain as it may be. We will greet the new future. We will greet what the new future awaits with hope." So it seems like, and there are rumors that DC is moving into a super loose continuity future, where everything sort of gets to exist, and everybody gets to sort of not worry about it, which seems like a good idea, but it could be a bad idea. Who knows? But this
I mean, the only problem with that is it becomes confusing,
right? And most fans want the continuity. Most Wednesday readers are in it.
I think the only thing is just that, like, when Captain America, you know what I mean, just for example, like, appears in one book one way, and then he's in another book another way, it just gets hard to keep them straight. That's for me.
Right, and I think. I'm not saying we are that way, but most we've done this for 20 years, and most fans seem to want the tapestry, the tapestries. And if they, you know, we'll see. But I'm just saying, this may be the point where it's happening. I don't know.
Well, I can tell you that I don't know that I have ever in the history of this show drifted away from what you were saying as quickly as I did. That's when nice. You started talking. I mean, like I went really far away, and then I said, "He's quoting something, so there's a reason," and I got sucked all the way back. So it was a big journey for me.
Well, the thing is, when it used to be three of us in the show, and like you and Ron would be talking about some book I didn't care about, I would have like a magazine, and I would just sort of leaf through it while you guys were talking.
Uh-huh.
Can't do that now with the two people.
No, but
so for a second, you got to return to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, but an instinct is strong, and I thought, well, this any information that's conveyed during this next part can only be harmful to my brain, and it said no. But you know, you pull me back in, and I think you pulled out something that is interesting and relevant to comic books in general. Maybe not.
That's the whole point. We don't know.
Maybe not a thing. I made The Devil's Red Bride number one, the pick of the week. This week, issue number 2 came out. So if, in case you thought I was all full of hot air, no, I went back. I paid for it. I got this book. It was fun. It was like, it was a lot of really bloody sword fight and katana action scenes. And that was enough. That was enough for me to enjoy it. This lady who has to pretend to be her brother, who is useless, she has a lot of issues.
I assume so.
Yeah, and there's like this. There's, I thought it was a really nice sort of motif that kept recurring. She just kept saying, you know, "Let me in," meaning like, you know, you have to let me, you know, let me be who I am, and you know, the gender and all that stuff. It's really good. I liked it. I mean, not amazing, but fun, and you know. There's a few genre where I can take super serious. I love super overly serious melodramatic, you know, samurai stories. Like, sure. That's exactly what they're supposed to be like.
Every couple of issues of Die Die Die, I keep thinking to myself, why am I still reading this? This is Image Comics, Robert Kirkman and Scott Gimple writing, Chris Burnham drawing it. And I go, oh, right, I really like Chris Burnham, both as an artist and as a person. But and then every so often there's every couple issues I'm like, oh right, the story's strange and over the top, but I do enjoy it. And the thing is, like, I can't even tell you overall what's happening. It's sort of this story about, it's a completely over the top story about these secret cabals within government who are trying to you know, change things from behind the scenes, and all their wacky over the top plans. And they have all these, there's secret armies and there's aliens and there's, you know, hidden aliens. And there's all kinds of, it's like basically every kind of crazy conspiracy theory, but done as a comedy tale and over the top violence.
How regularly does this come out?
Not super, which is okay. Part of the problem. But
I thought I saw this on the I forgot that this was a thing. I thought this was the Kieran Gillen thing.
No, die. That's just die. This is three dies.
Single
this is
die.
Three times better. So the first scene is these two astronauts returning to Earth, and some shit's gone down. And I totally had forgotten what had gone down, because again, I don't know the last time this issue came out. So some shit's gone down. People on Earth are crying, and these two astronauts are coming back, and they're like, "Oh man, something really bad happened." And they don't know what it is, and so their ship is not like a ship we have now. It looks like a UFO. It's like a saucer. And they look up what had happened. They go, "Oh shit, that's terrible." And clearly, we need to. And it's a great page turn where the ship just turns around and heads back to space. It's like, good call. Yeah, fuck that place. It's a lost cause. And so they go back to space. So that made me laugh. It made me laugh really hard. And then. There's a couple of weird bits, but then the main show piece for me was Burnham draws an excellent President Obama, who's, I guess, still the president here. And he's giving a briefing to the press, and a reporter stands up to chastise him, calls him evil, and the Secret Service to tackle him. And Obama says, no, let the man through. And so he gives
him through. He's got questions. Let's go.
Gives him an Obama speech about, hate is a tool for the powerful use to protect themselves from the masses. And I think everyone's a victim because the country's failed everybody. And to demonize them is to lose faith in the power of education. You know, it's a very Obama moment. You turn the page and the guy says, "You call me stupid," and takes a swing at him. And then Obama just dismantles him with like judo.
Nice.
That's
pretty good.
This is very funny. Like, he just blocks. And then he's just like, "I don't think you're stupid, Ron." Like, it's just very, it's silly. Yeah. And there's a lot of fight scenes, and Burnham's really, really good at action, and he's really good at comedic over the top characters and situations. And I think read all together, it probably I'd be able to follow it better. I don't even know that it doesn't come out monthly, but I have a hard time remembering when it does. I know it's constantly falling late because I get the Comixology announcement that it's coming, you know, when you have your subscription book, and then it's constantly being slipping. So, but this is, next issue says December 16th. So maybe it'll be on time. And that's not the point. The point is it's funny. It's over the top. The Chris Burnham art's terrific.
Cool.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. And through the muck of all the horror books that I voted for this week, the winner turned out to be Barb Alien, Red Planet #1 from Dark Horse Comics. It's from the World of Black Hammer book written by, well, it's plotted by Jeff Lemire and Tate Bromble, written by Tate Bromble, art by Gabriel Hernandez-Walta, Jordy Blair on colors, Adita Bidikar on letters. And so this is Josh's foray into Black Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
You hadn't read any before. You had read one before.
I've read a couple here and there. I think I definitely have, because I know there's been at least one patron pick. There was one where it was like the Justice League on a farm.
Oh, right. Well, that's... Oh, you mean the crossover with the Justice League?
I guess. It was a long time ago. Yeah. And then there was, you know, I think I've read a few of them just on accident.
So what they've been doing now is they've been doing these character studies of the various characters. And again, we'll mention that Black Hammer is basically the Silver Age DC universe through Jeff Lemire's lens. And so this is the John Jones character.
Mark Marks. That's how I knew.
The Barbarian.
I thought when on the cover, I thought it was going to be like Mr. Miracle or like Red Tornado. That's what I thought, because but
of
then
the design.
Yeah. So I like, I think this time period and the story that they're telling is really interesting. The story that is going on in the background of it, which is, we'll say, you know, basically 80s New York, gay culture, and how AIDS was sort of completely ravaging
Because Barb Alien is well, he's an alien, but I was going to say he's a gay man, but he, in his human identity, he is a gay man.
Yeah, but he's a cop and he's coming out. Yeah,
he's in the closet.
Yeah. That said, I think that that is a really fascinating and overlooked point in history that really matters. I don't feel like this is the right venue with which to explore it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't or you couldn't. I feel like it's kind of interesting enough on its own, and we should, I don't know. I feel like people should be interested in the history enough to sort of read it on its own. This was featured pretty heavily in the what was the show? The David Simon show?
The Deuce?
The Deuce, yeah. This was going on in the background of that. Obviously, there's been a lot of HBO shows about it, I feel like. I don't know.
See, I would disagree because I think comics have a long history of including civil rights movements and action.
I know. I know. It just felt like I'm not saying comics shouldn't deal with civil rights things, but it just, I don't know. It rubbed me wrong for some reason. But it was like, it was well done. It was good. Gabriel Hernandez Walta and Jordi Belair in colors. I like that she just like, I'm going to work with this artist whenever they do anything. Doesn't matter what it is, what company, whichever. You know, I thought it was all really good. I don't know. I for some reason, it didn't quite click for me in that way. And it's not that I don't think it's important. It's not that I don't think the comics can do those things. It just felt incongruous a little.
I thought this was really good. So he goes, he's exiled. He's sentenced to death on Mars, and he's exiled. So what's the sentence here? It's a weird sentence. It's like
he's got 30 days before death,
right.
And he's chained up. He can't go back to Earth, and then they kill him. And so he walks around in. See, there was a little timeline thing that I got lost
on
too.
So he flashes back basically. So
yeah,
he
but so. There's a thing where he gets the sentence in the very beginning, and then we go back to Earth and we see something happened with his partner. And I thought that was meaning to say like they had an encounter, but it sounds like
they flashed to it. There's a panel of it. He has
but he just hit on him. They didn't have like like an affair. And that's what I kind of thought it meant. And so that kind of confused me. And then we've come. So he goes through this whole thing and he's sort of self-discovering and I go back to Mars, and somebody in a hood sneaks into the king's room or whatever, and I thought, oh, this is probably him again in the present, because they said he could roam around with his chains on, but it's a different guy. I guess it was his brother, and then he goes back to Earth like they're going to fight, and I was like, well, is this before or this now?
Yeah, I don't know when the last bit. I assume the last bit's also in the past, but I don't know.
Yeah.
That was a little confusing.
Well, and this is one of those things, like, tell that story. You know, like this, that's too much story, I think. Like it, those things are like, it's hard. And then like, so are the Martians homophobic? And does that even mean anything that, you know what I mean? Like it was weird.
That seemed to be definitely be the idea in the beginning was that he was seen with another human man.
With a human male of all things. And I was like, all right, I guess don't have sex with. Gay, don't be a gay alien fucker, I guess. Like, I don't know. It was missing something for me.
So let's do ratings. On Barb Alien Red Planet number one. Ratings out of 5. I'm going to go 4. I really liked it.
3.
Okay. Are you going to stick with it?
Probably not.
Doesn't sound like it.
Unless you tell me, you know, this really picked up and it was great. Sure. I'd be open to it. But, nah.
I gotcha. So those are the Patreon picks. That is the Patreon picks. Only one of them. Patreon.com/iFanboys, where you can go to do that. Any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. But at the $5 or higher level, you get your superpower live on the show. Like these two fellows, both named Steven.
Steven! Steven!
It was, I mean, not Steve. Steven. Both are Steven.
Both with a V. Steven Bagatol.
Can I say real quick before you start is that... There's a guy I work with named Steven.
Uh-huh.
He's not either of these guys. But I keep calling him Steve because of Captain America, and I don't know if he's mad about that. I keep feeling bad every time it comes out of my mouth, but How often do I get to call someone Steve?
I mean, it's not an uncommon name. I feel like I've known a lot of Steves in my time.
You had a roommate named Steve.
Yep.
But since then, do you know a new Steve?
Hmm.
We had a boss named Steve? No, we didn't have a boss named Steve.
Yeah, we did.
We did have a boss named Steve.
Yeah, we did. We had a boss named Steve, but he was not Captain America.
No. Anyway, I'm sorry. I just want to...
Wow. I can't say that I've ever seen that I've ever had a conversation with somebody lamenting a lack of Steves in their life.
You know,
the thing about today's world is you got all these politics things going on. And have you even seen a Steve lately? What is up with that?
You this is the content people come from.
Yep.
It's the Steve talk. Steve corner.
Sure. We're going to get a lot of Steve email. Like, I'm right here, dude. And also,
yeah, if your name is Steve or Steven and someone calls you the other thing, are you mad? Should I apologize? I don't.
Oh, you should totally. You should totally send him an email that goes, "You're Steven, but I keep calling you Steve. Is that okay?" And then you'll know, and then he'll know that you do care. You're not just.
I'm going. So he and I are always the first people in the Zoom meeting.
Right.
Always.
Yeah.
So next time that happens, I'll just say like, "Hey, I didn't realize I just keep calling you Steve, but is that a problem?" He's super laid back. I'll probably say no, but I still feel bad about it.
And then you could be like, "I really like Captain America is the reason." And then somebody else will pop on the call. Like, "What are you guys talking about?" And you'll be like, "Don't worry about it."
No, it's fine. Anyway, let's not get into my interest.
Steven Bagatorian has the power to talk to ghosts, but only ghosts who are complete assholes while they were alive.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's no nice people around. It's just
does he conjure them or are they just around?
They're around. You know, he can see, you know, he can commune with the spirits, but the only ones he has a conduit ones are, you know, and they don't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be Hitler. Just that guy was a prick. Like our boss Steve. Nah, he wasn't a prick. He was something else.
So if a ghost appears, he just knows it's an asshole.
Yeah, no, it's always, yeah. Like, oh, God, great. These guys again. This is, you know, sometimes assholes have, you know, some redeeming qualities, but they're unpleasant.
Sure.
Like the ghosts come along and he gives them advice that he didn't ask for. It is unqualified. He's like, what you want to do is get one of, yeah, I mean, no, I had a TV. It was like, this uses, like, they're trying to be helpful, but they don't even know they're assholes.
I didn't ask for your advice, Bob.
Yep. And he keeps calling him Steve, and he's like, "I'm Steven." I'm like, whatever, Steve. And he sees foreign people and with the weird names they don't quite know. And they're just, "I'm gonna call you Joe." That kind of ghost.
Right. Mm-hmm. Steven Petrovelli. Also, they both have long last names. It's very interesting.
It would appear that we have, I guess, an Armenian name and perhaps a Italian name.
Perhaps.
But Steve is where cultures come together. Steven.
It sounds like, it's almost like they came over to Ellis Island and they just were given Steven.
Let's see. Bagatorian 5, Petrovelli 4. Okay, so Bagatorian wins the syllable.
Steven Petrovelli, so you ever like, you know, you're either in bed or you're on the, you know, you're doing something and you hear a noise and you go, "What was that noise?"
Mm-hmm.
Steven knows what that noise was.
Ooh.
He knows what makes the noise.
Is it specific? Because, let's say, for example, sometimes at night I hear noises in my walls and between the floors.
Yeah.
And that tells me that we got a critter. And then the question is always, because every critter in a wall sounds like it's much bigger than it is.
Right.
And monsters. So can he specify like, "Oh, that's just a mouse," or it's an opossum. Which is a problem.
Oh, for sure. He knows what made the noise. So he'd be like, "Oh, that's a mouse. Oh, that's an opossum. Or that's a demon."
Right.
You know, whatever is doing your noise.
How specific does it get? Like, "Oh, it's a brown mouse. He's 6 weeks old."
He knows all about
Tony Chu.
Yeah. Okay. But for noises.
Right. That he can't. Okay. Well, all right. Let's say that you can see what makes the noise, but then is there more clarity?
He knows. He doesn't see it. Right. It's not like a vision. He just knows
right.
the answer.
Okay. I'm so saying, like, does he have to see the source of the noise?
Well, it's like this. If you're in, let's say you're in bed and you hear a glass smash outside, right? You hear glass smashing. He's like, "Oh, that's just a broken bottle," as opposed to like, "Oh, someone just broke a car window." Like that kind of thing. Like, he just knows what the noise is.
Okay. Okay, right. Based on physical...
he doesn't know the name of the guy and what he did.
Okay, there's no psychic element. It's just that together the information in a much better way than most people could. That's glass. That's the sound of a car running over a glass that had been dropped there.
Right.
Okay.
So Steven and Steven.
A couple of Stevens.
They should form like a law firm.
Yeah, I was thinking
Steven and Company.
I was thinking a detective agency, but either
that's
way,
not, that makes more sense. That's not schooling.
We're pitching an NBC show. Steven
and Company.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
And they can use their powers to fight crime.
My two Stevens.
Wait, what was yours again?
Ghosts.
Oh, the ghost thing. Yeah, so that's awesome. You can talk to one can talk to ghosts, and one knows all the noises. They can have a show on NBC at Thursday nights.
Let's make up a let's say this. If we give out a patron power and you pitch a series based on that patron power, it's all yours.
But you have to attach us as producers.
Yeah, no, I don't want any money, but we definitely we get a credit.
No. We're attached as executive producers, and we get okay. we get a little fee, but
we
that's
get a taste?
It. It's not a big fee. It's not a big fee.
All right.
That's, but we, so that's, we created the powers.
Well, are we giving them away or not?
Let's not cut our own throats here, Josh.
Well, I mean, it's a long shot, but I guess you're right.
Who knows who's listening? Could be a guy who's really he's got a pitch meeting on Monday. He's got no ideas, and there you go. He walks in with Stephen and Stephen and Company.
Well, the question is, if the ghost of Stephen J. Cannell was with Stephen Bagatorian, we might have something here. If he was an asshole, which
and the thing is, most people who make TV are assholes.
Wait a minute, did I just say Stephen J. Cannell?
You did, yeah.
Whoa, Steve.
Yeah, another Steve.
Wow, that's crazy.
I thought that's why you're doing it.
No, I didn't even put it together. It's just he's the guy I thought of when I was talking about shows like that. You know, with the paper does the curl. How okay, so this is where I like to ask this question. What percentage of the audience have we lost? I mean, I'm not saying they turned it off and walked away, but are just like, please. They're looking for that 15-second forward button.
This is why you never get to the emails.
Yeah. That is all of that is because of patrons.
Patreon.
Go over to patreon.com/ifanboy. You will qualify to get your own patron superpower to the $5 or higher a month level. And look at what you just created. What we created, but because you did a thing, what I'm saying. And is it worth anything? Does it make your life better? No. Objectively, no. But is it a minute of distraction and or confusion? Could be those things. Do you want to be part of that? Patreon.com/ifanboy. They have made possible many things. Many, many, many things. Mostly in the form of podcasts. There have been Talksplode podcasts, which are interview shows. Booksplode podcasts, where we dive into a longer format comic book discussion about a single volume. There are the Media Splodes, where we talk about mostly streaming because we're all stuck in our homes.
Yep.
There could be another one. The next one could be a G.I. Joe show, G.I. Joe Corner of some kind that we haven't put down. And the one after that, quarterly barbecue show. I made some ribs last week.
We've been doing our own quarterly barbecue shows just solo without recording them.
Yeah. Connor, all you have to do is say the word barbecue to Connor and he melts a little.
Well, I just hardly ever have it anymore. So it's just
that's on you.
It's that thing. I'm trying to be healthy.
Well,
it's not working. They're trying.
Is there a point?
No, not really.
Yeah, exactly. You can go to thank you to everybody who is a patron. It really is important and is meaningful. And thank you to the people who do that. You're all great people. Provided you're wearing your mask.
Yeah, if you were a ghost, Stephen wouldn't see you.
I agree. It's a number one sign. People who are paying for content that they believe in and support at an independent level. You almost can't be an asshole. ifanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt and items store, phone cases, bath mats. They do curtains. I don't know. You can find 8 designs
we
there.
Do barbecue aprons.
We should. That must be a
thing. Imagine an electro apron. That'd be awesome.
That really is good.
It would be awesome. Like a bright green one with one is electro.
Mm-hmm. And almost in barbecue and or grilling, which are different things. Nothing makes sense, nothing matters actually does not apply. It all matters, and it all makes sense. And that is, I would say, the blind spot of that sort of very useful phrase. Mm-hmm. Stay home and read comics. That is a portion of all those sales will go to the Comic Book United Fund. The portion is half, by the way, just so we're clear. We're always open to new designs if we have the idea for them. ifanboy.com/support is a place.
It's been a good year for inspiration.
It's true, but not the good kind. ifanboy.com/support if you don't want to deal with any of that stuff. And we have a direct donation via PayPal link there if you would like to help out in that way. And finally, ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can go to buy links on the Booksplode shows and a general link for anything else you're buying in the holiday season. which is fairly significant for us in that way. So make sure to use that if you're going with Amazon. However, and I want to stress this, if you're buying comic books or graphic novels, try to support your local shops now more than ever.
Yes.
Specifically, that is one thing that I can speak to. I would even go so far as to say that with record stores if you have them around. But for comics, I'm not recommending you use our Amazon link. For comics, I'm recommending you find out who your local store is and you send money to them, because it's never, ever, 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 ever been more important than it is right now for you to do so if you want comics to stick around. It's a very fragile house of cards, and you should go do that. I'm done with that soapbox. What are we doing now?
We can do some email, because why not? They're not that long. The first one's from Greg P. from Everett, Washington. How many comics do the comics writers read? If a comics writer would read comics, that's almost like it's one of those things.
How many comic writers do the comics read if a comic reader would write comic? Wait, I got it wrong. That's close.
I added the second part, but his question is, how many comics do the comics writers read? Because they need to know what's going on to write within continuity. There's continuity again. Does Bendis read dozens of DC comics each month to stay in the loop? Or do they get daily briefings like the president? I've been wondering this for 2 hours. I love the idea that there's a daily briefing for all the people making comics. I love that. Oh man, Greg, none of this happens. how many comics do the comics writers read? They read it varies by writer. I know some writers who read everything and some writers who read nothing.
Yep.
The job of the editor is to do all the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
The job of the editor is to make sure it's in some sort of continuity. Wasn't this in the video when we went to DC for our two-part Inside DC show, the video, which is what they're both on YouTube. Was it Mike Martz's office?
It was Mike Martz.
Board?
Yep.
Yeah, he was the group editor for Batman, and he had a big board with all the characters and where they were and what they were doing. That's the editor's job.
Yep.
The writer does not have to read all the books. They get the books. Some of them are huge comic fans. Other ones are not as huge. You'd be surprised. It's not.
Generally speaking, I think most of the career guys have a pretty good handle on Marvel and DC, like where they're working from a standpoint. And I tend to think happens is that they pick their lane of what they're going to write based on sort of their favorite stuff that they liked in those comics. And so they sort of go with that. And I think that folks definitely go and they do their research for a given story. You know, if they're going to build off of something or do a certain character that isn't always around, you know, you'll see that a lot. But in terms of keeping up with all the comics that come out, I would say, in my experience, a lot of them tend to drop off from that because it just doesn't mean the same thing to them anymore. And also it can be distracting. I don't know. I tend to think that most of them stop reading weekly. I know that we've had a lot of people who listen to this show who kind of don't anymore because they work in comics full time now and they just don't keep up. Also, super busy job.
Yeah, again, that's just that. That's not their job. It's the editor's job to make sure everything is fitting in. We talked about this back on episode 750 and how what the editor's jobs are and the overall vision align would fall into the editors.
And for making the decision, like, do we want to change this for continuity or not? And that's right. That's a valid decision too. Like, well, let this go because it's in the story is more important than this one, or vice versa.
I like the idea though that there's like a 9 a.m. Zoom meeting, and everyone at DC has to call in, and it's like one guy going, "All right, so over in Green Arrow, he broke his arm, so make sure you reflect that in all your books."
Left arm. What arm, sir? No, I choose to believe that Greg was being facetious about that, but I know that it is a beautiful like it's just. 50.
No, is it? I think
it's the worst part for comic writers when they get a job is like, no, now I got to go to the 9 a.m. calls, and the guys on the West Coast are fucked.
Because you don't go into comics writing to work 9 to 5.
No.
You know, unless you work the cross-gen.
Not like those squares at the office.
Chris P. writes in, and his subject line of his email was, "Pick of the Week 757, formal complaint."
Wow.
"It's been years since I last emailed you, so listening to episode 756 and 757, I felt I needed to finally break my silence and issue a formal complaint with iFanboy management."
We have been wondering, you know, we haven't heard from Chris in a while.
Right. What happened to that dude? Chris says, "How can I stop buying, reading, and enjoying what you call fringe Marvel books if you continue to remind me how fun and enjoyable they are? I'm trying to cut back. I'm trying to save money. I'm trying not to have as much fun as I had the week prior when reading my comics, but no. Josh and Connor have to talk about Taskmaster, Fantastic Four, Strange Academy, U.S. Agent, Spider-Woman, and other books. And that it just sort of ended right there.
I mean, I think the answer is fairly clear. Don't read the other ones. Because what I'm hearing is you're looking at, I think this is what a lot of people do. They look at a bunch of comics and they go, well, you got your meat and potatoes. You got your Avengers. You got your Spider-Man. You got your Justice X-Men. League, your whatever. And you buy those because, well, those are the ones I have to buy. I'm a comic book reader. How can I not be buying Avengers?
Right.
So you keep buying them, but your enjoyment on those, you know, is
lower.
Lower. It's half of what the other ones are. Now,
I mean, listen. Okay, go ahead.
There is something to be said about the continuity of sticking with the thing. Connor, you could speak to this. You're going to read the Batman. You're going to do the stuff. You're going to spend your time on that. But you don't have to.
No. And I realize that there's a joke in the tone here. Like,
oh, sure.
But it's just the fact that there's all these great books we keep talking about. But, you know, Avengers is a strange thing. Like, it's written by Jason Aaron, who's one of my favorite writers of the modern age. And it's drawn by a series of terrific artists.
Yeah.
But could I tell you what's happening in it right now if you put a gun to my head? No. I don't even remember what happened in the last issue. I feel like it's a very irrelevant comic, and I don't know why.
Oh, Mark Spector was trying to stop Khonshu
from
taking over the universe, and he failed at that. So now he needs to go and do it himself. And he doesn't want the Avengers to help him. He appeared like
now he's an Avenger.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't enjoy that book as much as I enjoy Taskmaster, Fantastic Four, Stranger's Academy, US Agent, Spider-Woman.
However, I'm still reading it.
Sure. Of course. But
so I'm not guilty of this, I suppose.
No, and I think we're twisting this around. He's not saying what we're talking about. But my point is, for me, we said this before, the best stories, the most enjoyable stories are these side books at Marvel right now, overall.
I mean, the trick about that, though, is that at least when the other books, the sort of mains, you kind of know what you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And with the fringe books, it is more of a long shot. You don't know which ones are going to be good, and they're not all good.
No.
And so if you really want that date, you got to find a balance, my friend.
But like nothing, you know, Hawkeye Freefall was terrific, as opposed to, you know, more high profile books.
Well, you also gotta notice patterns. Really, that's the thing. You gotta say, all right, so Matt Rosenberg, if he ever gets his hands on Black Widow, Hawkeye or Winter Soldier, I'm going to pay attention to that.
Right.
If he's doing X-Men, maybe that's not your bag. Or maybe it is. I don't know. But you got to follow those patterns. Like when somebody's doing a book, like they get the big book that makes their job. But then there's that other one that no one talks about that they're doing. That's going to be the good book because that's the one they care about.
Right. I think we took Chris's email a little too more seriously than he intended to, but I think that was a good conversation.
Which is ironic for us.
Contact@ifanboy.com is how Chris and Greg got on the show. Thanks for writing in. And let's quickly go over the holiday schedule since we're
get
in
your,
New
Year. Get your year. Notebooks out, people.
So we only have three more Picks of the Week show this year. We have 759, which comes out in 11/29. We have 760, which comes out in 12/6. And we have 761, which comes out in 12/13. And that is it.
How did we get to this point?
And then we take a break. And then we come back on January 10th with 762. So those are only three more regular shows. However, we got a whole smorgasbord of special shows unlocked by the patrons. So there will be a Talksplode at some point, either this month, which is a rapidly closing, or it'll slide to December.
Did you guys catch that? Did you see what he just did to me?
Or, worst case scenario, it slides to January and he does two Talksplodes, which has happened before. It's not Josh's fault. It's a holiday end of the year.
No, this is my fault. Problem. I got that last one done at the last minute, and I thought, oh, I'm good. And then 2 weeks go by. Then all of a sudden, November is finally over. I start reaching out, and this is the flaky time of the year, though. That is a thing
hard
that happened.
Yeah. And so then we have – so that may or may not
the
happen.
The thing is, though, they're home.
That's true. Stop dodging my email.
Right.
Mediasplode is coming out this week, this Thursday at 11/27, our final Mediasplode of the year. It's in the can. It's done. I know it's definitely coming out. We have a Booksplode coming out December 10th. Also done in the can. I know that's coming out. And then we have our all-media show will come out on December 20th, which we haven't recorded and have not even talked about. So I hope that comes out. And then also the one last thing to mention is our final hangout of the year In fact, it's probably the final one open to everyone. It'll probably go back to being patrons only next year. Will happen December 12th to Saturday. So those are the shows, the dates for the rest of the year. Write it in your diary.
Fair enough. They changed the icon for the text thing that we use for the script, and I could not find it for a second there.
Why are you constantly closing the script?
I'm not closing the script. I moved it behind something else because I wanted to make a note about somebody who I thought I should approach for a talk spot while you were talking because I had an idea and I didn't want to forget about it. That's exactly what happened there.
Was it Moon Knight?
That is a fictional character.
Oh.
I mean, I suppose I could go find Stephen Grant and ask him to write the interview in character. Not super interested in that, though. Get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts and all the stuff that is there. They've been written over the years. You can find out what the pick of the week is. Before the show comes out, you can be prepared. You do Sunday morning or whenever it is you download it, or on a given week, a Saturday, because I don't know how dates work. You know, you don't have to get your show and go, oh, that's the pick? You can be prepared before then so that you can listen freely. You can find out what that pick is by going to facebook.com/ifanboy. For now, or following at iFanboy on Twitter. That's probably not going anywhere. At iFanboy.com, or I'm sorry, at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. Those are fairly well entrenched. You will also find the best of the weekend panels, etc. If I've done anything right in my life, by the way, there will be at least a few of these from me this week. I promise. unless it's Sunday, like you didn't, and then eventually Steven will be able to talk to my ghost. You can follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick and at J. Flanagan on Instagram. Subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. You want to go down in the corner, you want to rate, you want to subscribe, you want to like this, and there's a lot more content coming your way. So I'm going to get real excited about it, and we're going to see you guys soon.
Smash that like button.
Smash it. Smash it. We are regularly, monotonously, we're doing it though. We're uploading our old video shows. It happens like clockwork. This past week is Mini Don't Miss, which is some Wolverine comic you shouldn't miss. The Don't Miss series, brainchild of former host of the show Ron Richards, which is the thing about a comic on Monday that we'd say, hey, you want to look at it? And we made it a Wolverine comic, which is dumb.
I think it was Wolverine First Class. I don't remember.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, but it was our Monday mini was usually Don't Miss a book for this week. It was like the Don't Miss podcast audio show, which would come out, we'd go over a couple of books that you shouldn't miss this week.
And then there is a video show of the comic book podcasting panel from WonderCon 2008. The WonderCon 2008 show was really the most important pivoting point in the history of this website, I think. I think that was a weekend that made a lot of things very lasting for us. I believe this podcasting, were you on this one with me?
We all three of us were.
Oh, we were not welcome.
And it was, I think Niesman was on it with us from around comics.
Heidi?
No, that one.
Okay. This is... Not the one where Connor predicted every single thing that would happen in comics and they hated him for it.
Yeah, that was later. That was my last one. Yeah. I was not invited back after that.
You weren't wrong.
No.
There's that panel. That one actually.
I can tell you right now. Hold on. I have it. I just pulled it up. That one was on that panel.
That kind of one was kind of fun.
This was Brian Deemer from Comic Geek Speak, Logan Hall and Leanie Taylor from I Read Comics, Christopher Neeson from Around Comics, and you and me and Ron. Well, and we had a quorum.
Yeah, we kind of weighted that one down. There's also a vault episode, which is where we each grab a volume of a book of some kind and talk about it. We do three of them. Boom, boom, boom.
Do you want to know what that one was?
Sure.
Hold on. Let me refresh the page. 1 second while everybody waits while my computer refreshes. That one was The Gollum's Mighty Swing, Indiana Jones Omnibus, and something I can't read the title.
That runs.
Very long.
That's all I know.
This was a show we shot on the stage of Techzilla.
Oh, that was from that same weekend.
Yeah.
I remember.
Well, no. These are the minis and the regular shows. Oh, no, this is the regular show. Yeah, we shot the same weekend because we were in San Francisco. So we shot on the set of Techzilla Revision 3. Everybody freaked out. They thought we had a new set, even though we tried to make it super obvious. We kept the Techzilla logo on the wall.
I know exactly what I'm wearing there because I remember the photo.
We did two shows there.
Yeah.
Shot them back to back. And what was that one? It was, Breakfast Afternoon. That was yours.
Oh, that was mine. I thought mine was going to be.
I did the Golem's Mighty Swing. Oh, Ron did Indiana Jones Omnibus, and you did Breakfast Afternoon.
Fair enough. I got it wrong.
Yeah. So, by the way, just to cap that off, is that, you know, that's where we talked about indie books for most of the time, was on our video show, especially in the Vault show. So if you want to hear us talk about sort of indie classics, that's where to do it.
Take us home, Kilpatrick.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at our videos.
I know you were.
Which space am I in? Here we go. Like the show, write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to shows. Leave a star rating, leave a review. It helps podcasts. This show, any show you listen to, if you find one you like, that's a great way to help them out. We do appreciate that. Even better than that is word of mouth. Tell your friends. If people ask what shows you listen to, if you mention ours, we thank that. Thank you. People still do it on social media all the time, and we thank you for doing that. Thanksgiving's coming up if you're in America. Why not deflect from the inevitable political discussion to talk about podcasts you like? What are you guys listening to? Well, I'm listening to iFanboy. And that's how we would do it. I mean, yeah. I don't want to write the script for you, but, you know, it's better to talk about that than masks.
Yeah. I mean, I mean,
quite honestly, you should be at the dinner anyway.
I was going to say, I'm picturing a Zoom call with your grandma, and she can't figure out how to turn the volume up. She just can't hear you. And you're just like, no, you do that. I've been on that call. Not my family, but,
with my grandmother, it's just I talk to her forehead.
Yeah, yeah, that's
because she has an iPhone and she knows how to use FaceTime and she knows how to text and she's 93.
Nice.
But when we talk on FaceTime, it's her forehead, which is fine.
That's fine. Totally fine. Hey, if you're still listening at this point, first of all, God bless you.
You mean specifically today or in general?
No,
or
just both? Right now. Specifically right now. I am curious. Was this show awful? Like, I think there's a chance that it was like, or is this why you're here? Like, we can say it's objectively awful, but you could say, oh, I enjoyed that. And if you've bailed already, I don't really care. Cause you decided, hey, this isn't for me. And you know, fair play to you.
Yeah.
Is this awful? just let us know.
This is the end of the year. This is sort of what happens.
Yes, it does. That's true.
We spiral out and then we come back refreshed after a couple
this
weeks
is,
off.
This has got to be the most Steven-centric show we've ever done.
it's got to be.
I know
Captain America was the pick.
Specifically.
We talked about two Steves in the thing. And then we had my work, Steve.
I think I can point
Steven.
To we, eight
Your
Steves.
Old roommate, Steven.
Steven J. Cannell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one.
Yeah. There was a lot of Steves involved. We should stop doing this show right now. Is what I think.
All right, well, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Steve.